Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White, good morning to you.
Good morning. A bittersweet morning.
A bittersweet morning, yes.
Yes, bittersweet morning because, of course, Peter Thompson passing away yesterday, which was a bit of a surprise, to be honest. I know that he hadn't been well, but that surprised me. And I think, you know, I think he was Australia's greatest ever golfer, and we'll talk about it throughout the course of the morning. But the good news is our man's back.
Our man being the man fresh from his mojito, fajita, siesta, sombrero, sort of Speedy Gonzalez stuff situation. No. Adam Ramanauskas is back after his holidays junk in Mexico.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. I found a new drink over in Mexico.
What is it?
It's called the Miami Vice.
Sounds good already.
It was good. It's a mix of like a strawberry daiquiri and a pina colada, sort of in the Slurpee style. It was in the pool in Mexico.
Ice situation.
Yeah, 30 sort of something degrees. It was very nice, but no, look, good to be back. And when I land back in Melbourne, back in Australia, it makes you appreciate this country more and more every time.
You're happy home?
We're so fortunate over here. Mexico, which was great. Cabo, fantastic. Then LA, which the more I go there, the less of a fan I'm becoming of that place.
I reckon you can have LA on with you.
But
Cabo?
Yeah.
Do you carbo load in Cabo?
This is where we go already. This is early in the morning.
Never heard of Cabo.
Never heard of Cabo.
Nah.
You don't watch enough reality television. That's where they all go to holiday.
Exactly. So, not good to be back, and plenty to talk about.
Lots to talk about.
Lots happening.
What was making news from a sporting sense in Mexico?
Well,
the World Cup would have been
given
the build up.
The artificial tremor that was created when Mexico scored the first goal. It was there was a reading on the Richter scale over there.
There was not.
There was so.
Is that true?
That is absolutely true.
That's awesome.
That is absolutely
fake news.
How's that fake news? The country is supporting their team,
and they
created an artificial earthquake that was a reading on the Richter scale.
Yeah.
What do you can't just dismiss that.
Well, I am.
You can't. That's unbelievable.
Exactly. It's unbelievable.
No, it's believable because it's on the Richter scale.
And then in the States.
Nobody doctors the Richter scale to suit the agenda and the narrative, as they say in the business.
It's like a lie detector. You can fake the test.
You can't fake a Richter scale.
Oh, you can't. In the States, it was all about the Warriors, them getting over the top of, obviously, the Cavs.
Well, that's cool because we're going to catch up with Andrew Bogut tomorrow.
Yeah, Kawhi Leonard potentially leaving the Spurs was big news.
Yes. Maybe off to the Cavs, maybe.
What's your read on LeBron James from sort of immersing yourself in the American scene?
No, not a lot. Not a lot at the moment. A lot of people, because being in LA on the West Coast, they're all thinking about, well, is he going to come to the Lakers? That's really was a question. I don't think anybody really has any idea at the moment, as much as people try to. So, I hope he stays at the Cavs. I hope he stays there, gets another player or two, and has another go. That's my take on it.
I hope he at least stays on the East Coast.
Mm.
Because I think the...
The Eastern Conference.
Yes. Yeah. Just... So you can have a situation where in the finals, that if there are going to be these two super teams, that at least one's on one side of America and one's on the other, and that they play off in the actual final as opposed to them both being in a similar conference or both the same side of the nation. Yep. And that's the issue if it becomes the Lakers versus the Warriors, that would be the case. Why is the New York Knicks never mentioned as a possibility? Because they just can't seem to get their act together.
Well, they've been mentioned as a possibility for Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, but not
for LeBron. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be some attraction, that whole idea of playing in New York and making the Knicks?
It's all about, so at the moment, it's all about max slots, what they call it in America. So who they can pay the max salary to. Now, I think the Lakers and a couple of other teams have got more of those max spots left on their team, whereas I don't think the Knicks do because they're still paying a fair chunk of Carmelo Anthony's deal. And then they've got Christian Porzingis. They've got a couple of players that they're paying, so they're lacking a little bit of power in that area.
We'll talk about that with Bogey tomorrow, I reckon. We need to talk about that because it's draft day tomorrow too, the NBA draft.
Which would be great memories for Andrew.
And DeAndre Ayton, he's the man.
He's the man. But there's a kid from...
All 213 centimetres of him. Massive man.
There's a kid that plays at Real Madrid. He's a point guard. Luka Doncic, I think his name is.
Doncic.
Doncic. He is a superstar. Absolute superstar of the Euro League at 18 years old.
Really?
MVP of the league, MVP of the finals series. 6'7". He could be a superstar.
Righto. Well, more on that tomorrow on The Breakfast Club. As I said, Andrew Bogut to join us tomorrow on draft day, which, as you said, Rama, would bring back nice memories for Bogut, being the number one pick himself back in the day. But certainly could talk about the impact of the Warriors on the NBA and the LeBron Kawhi Leonard situation in the trade discussion. Just on Peter Thompson, you said we'll talk about this after 8 more with Jack Newton. What about his stretch at the British Open through the 50s? Unbelievable. He was runner-up in 52 and 53. He won in 54, 55, 56. Runner-up in 57, and he won in 58. There were 7 years where he was first or second consecutively at the British Open, or the Open Championship, as they call it. It's an outstanding record. I don't think it's ever been matched by anyone in the major tournament since, or probably before, I'm sure.
No, and there's been so many great stories that have been shared over the last sort of 24 hours or so, reflecting on his career and reflecting on him as a person. And one of the things about that is everyone would say, you're pretty impressive record at the British Open, Mr. Thompson. You won it 5 times, and you go, oh, it's not that impressive. I lost it 25 times. I didn't win it. But I think the thing with Peter Thompson is that it's what he brought to the game, not just as a player. And I think that when we look back on anyone in any sport, it's not just what they did as a player. It's almost that ambassadorial role that they play and the responsibility they take on as a role model in the sport once they finish playing. Yeah. And I think with Peter Thompson, it was his ability to be so passionate about the game and protective of the game. A custodian of the game. He was a golf architect. He would be a commentator. He would write about the game. Fiercely Australian. Proud to be Australian. He didn't like the idea of the young players going over and living in America. He wanted to have them live back here and support the local tours and all those sorts of things. So, he was such a rounded player. He's quite a polarizing figure as well. Because he said what he thought. But the record speaks for itself.
I think a lot of course design around Australia is based on Peter Thompson when he was designing courses through, I think, the 70s and 80s. So a lot of our courses are based on, I think, what he started.
Yeah, no, he's fantastic. And our producer today, Andrew Hughes, who...
Yes, now this...
He is...
This is a revelation, this is.
There's this photo, we're going to tweet it. There's this photo.
And we'll circle the person too.
Well, we don't need to.
Well, you won't need to. He stands out.
Such a strapping figure.
Dashing, debonair young man.
But Andrew Hughes used to caddy for David Graham. And
major winner.
Yeah, major winner.
Major winner,
Andrew
David Graham.
Andrew Hughes is a bit of a big deal.
Oh, he's a very big deal.
So there's this photo that was doing the rounds yesterday that you found initially. I didn't realise the significance of the photograph. So it wasn't so much that Ian Baker Finch, David Graham, Greg Norman and Peter Thompson were all in the photo striding down the fairways. It was the strapping, handsome young Andrew Hughes just to the left carrying David Graham's bag.
Somebody else picked it up. I don't know how I came across it, actually, but somebody else picked it up and was Andrew Hughes. I was like, hang on a second, it bloody is.
I know that guy.
Bloody is. And then, even better, as part of the tributes that have flowed through in the last 24 hours for Peter Thompson, Greg Norman tweets that photo. So Greg Norman is effectively saying, Andrew Hughes, you rock. That's what I've come to the conclusion of. That Andrew Hughes is now a massive global phenomenon.
You're in my close group of friends.
He's in the circle of trust with Greg Norman. He's in deep in the circle of trust. And that's what I took out of yesterday. Cusey, you bloody star.
Well, you would have noticed that Andrew Cusey, of course, did the breakfast bite this morning.
Did a hell of a job too, just by the way.
Sort of a bit of a recognition for his impact on the game.
Getting a bit concerned that he might be trying to take over the whole show, the whole Breakfast Club situation, because he's kind of a big deal. He's got relationships with big sports stars. That's my concern. But he's doing a great job, and it was lovely to see a young Andrew Hughes doing his thing with that photo. You'll probably see it floating around on social media channels.
We'll put it up there now.
If you certainly follow Greg Norman, you'll see it.
Danish, they have a strong team, but as he's already said, they are number 12 on the world ranking. That says enough. They have a strong team, physical strong, very tall players. That's a weapon. Yeah, we played against France, and they have, I think, more quality in the players and more creativity. But I think the Danish are maybe more a team.
Hey, Bert. That is Aussie coach Bert van Marwijk getting ready for the Socceroos clash with Denmark tonight as part of their group situation in the Russian World Cup. Group C, but game two for them tonight. This World Cup report, thanks to the Tab. Check out the Aussie Futures offer and get more to celebrate when the Aussies score. Hopefully that is willy-nilly tonight against Denmark. Francis Leach is there in Samara getting ready for it. Good morning to you, Frank.
G'day, Harp. How are you?
Going very well, thank you. How are you? Are you a bit toey?
Yeah, it's going to be very, very tough. I mean, the Danes have come into this tournament in massive form. They've kept a clean sheet in their last five and they're unbeaten in their last 16 games. Their last loss was against Montenegro last year. So they come into this tournament very, very difficult to beat. So if anything, probably in better form than the French were. It's going to be a tough ask.
Well, that doesn't fill me with an enormous amount of confidence, Frank. can you,
well, I can't lie about the numbers. Half there, they are what they are. You can't look at the North Face and hope it's a flat road.
No, that is true. But can you sell me hope? What have you got for me?
Well, the Socceroos are just so very impressive in the opening game. I mean, they did everything but take advantage of their dominance for long periods in the match. And if they can find a way to score, then you know, that's the key to their success. Because in midfield, they look very comfortable indeed. And That's where they need to be again tomorrow. It's whether they can bring the same intensity and concentration for 90 minutes as they did against that opening game against France. Does he make a change? Does he, Robby Kroos is the one player people have been talking about. Does he leave him out and for a bit by playing Daniel Arzani from the start? If he does that, he might have that attacking flair and that X factor that was missing in the opening game, but he probably isn't going to get the same sort of defensive cover as he would from an experienced hand like Kroos. So that's going to be the decision that Marwijk has to make at some point, or whether Azani gets involved earlier than he did in the previous game. Does he go with McLaren? Does he give Jamie McLaren an opportunity to play up front and leave Andrew Nabut on the bench? I felt sorry for Nabut in that opening game because he was asked to do a lot of, you know, the pressing and running without much support. He was very rarely on the ball. That wasn't his fault, just with the nature of the game. He's just trying to close down Hugo Lloris all the time. So he's got a few options to change it up. Will he give Kale an opportunity at some point later in the game and become only the fifth player in the history of the game to score four consecutive World Cup finals again? So there's all those permutations. But, they'll be feeling good about their chances because they were so impressive in the first game.
Frank, it's Operation Stop Christian Eriksen. Now, 70% of the Danish goals he is a part of. Mila Jedinak was able to slow down Paul Pogba in the first game. Is he capable of doing it tonight for us?
Yeah, he was enormous, Jedinak, in that first game. And he's an intimidating presence. I mean, no one wants to be, with their back to goal with Jedinak around. And you're right about Eriksen. He's been involved in 17 goals in his last 14 appearances with Denmark, either scoring or providing assistance. So he's the key to their attacking threat. So yeah, Jedinak will be the man that will try to muscle up with him. He won't be intimidated by playing against Eriksen. I mean, if anything, the championship, the league that Jedinak's been playing in lends itself to that sort of more robust approach, as we saw in the coach against the French. So he obviously is the key to that. But, as I said earlier, if we can just get more firepower and we do have the advantage, and when Aaron Moy in particular was dominating in midfield, that's going to be the key. We need to score against the Danes, something can be conceded in five games. And if we can get the first goal in that game, it changes everything. So, they'll have come with a plan. No doubt they've watched that Montenegro game the last time the Danes lost, and hopefully that's sort of a way to try to at least get behind Kasper Schmeichel.
Is it almost, Frank, and considering the loss in the first round, if you want to get through, you're going to have to find enough points somewhere. Is this almost, you've got to really attack in this game as opposed to sort of sitting back and playing on a counter and seeing what happens? You've actually got to attack to try and score, as you say, to win the game early?
Yeah, you've got to believe you can win. And the only way you can win is by scoring. So they've got to go out there and try and do that. There's no doubt about that. And, you can't go to the game against Peru, I think, to break your winless run at the World Cup. It's been a long time since we won at the World Cup. But you go back to the game against Serbia in Elsford in 2010 for our last win. in a World Cup final. So that's what they've got to go and do. I think he will free them up to at least take the game on that way. I don't think they played too defensively against the French at all. Everyone maybe thought that the pragmatic approach that Van Marwijk might have been reminiscent of Tim Verbeek's approach in that sort of infamous game against Germany in Durban, where he started with almost a back six and didn't play a striker. It wasn't that at all. So I think he'll give them license to get forward and have a go, because he believes his team's capable of scoring. You've just got to find the right way to do it.
You talked before about Daniel Azzani, and I always like your perspective meter, Frank. You actually tell us exactly how things are. How good is he? Because he's such a hyped young player, but how good is he as a footballer?
Well, he's one of the few players we've seen in recent times too, from our local competition, who can dribble at speed at opponents and get past them. And he's also he plays with that fearlessness of youth, where he's prepared to express himself. He's incredibly gifted on the ball. So, you know, his close control and his technique is superb. He's really, really exciting. He's not quite Kylian Mbappe, that 19-year-old we saw running around with France the other day, who was, you know, like a ballet dancer with football boots. But he's in that mould. He's prepared to, you know, he's not going to be intimidated by big names or older opponents. It's that sort of impetuosity that he will bring that might, you know, be outrageously successful. But it will mean that, you know, he might get exposed in covering up the defence when they counter, and that's the price that you'll pay. So his moment is now. If he gets an opportunity, he's got to make the most of it. And we're all hoping that what we've seen in the A-League, because every time we thought with Melbourne City that, you know, he showed a little bit, then he showed a little bit more week after week, he got better and better and better, that he might at some point have a dip in form. It didn't quite happen. He's enormously confident in his own ability and doesn't seem to be in any way fazed by playing in the World Cup, which is great. And you want to give that sort of player an opportunity to go out there and meet everyone's expectations.
And it's great to have Magic Dor with us from the Kangaroos joining us in the Sanctum this morning. Morning, Maj.
Morning, boys.
Great to have you in, mate, because we've been watching you with great interest this year, the way you've come into the game and you've got the new number on the back. I reckon it might be the change. And 38-1, you've come in, you've had a huge impact on the Kangaroos. Have you enjoyed your season so far this year with the Kangaroos?
To be honest, having number one on my back, I feel a bit lighter. No, it's been a good transition. Obviously, playing as a forward and ruck all my time at the club, and this year I've been a defender, and just having guys like Scott Thompson, Robbie Tarrant, and having my role simplified, it's been enormous. And continuity with training and having a strong pre-season sets you up for a big year. So.
Oh, where did that conversation first come about, to move down back? Because as you said, you've been playing forward and ruck in your 5 years previously at the Kangaroos, and all of a sudden you're a defender. How does that come about?
It was just a training. Scotty put me down back and played down back. Took a few marks. But previously, I've always thought about, you know, what if and if I could play down back. And then I did a training and we had the chat, and it was around having a position that I can make my own. Mm. Obviously, we know how good Todd Golsan's going and Ben Brown up forward. And it just wasn't sustainable being in and out of the side and not having any continuity with footy. So, there was an opportunity to make a position my own. And he said, if you're willing to put in the work, and which I was willing to do because of the opportunity.
Yeah.
And having Josh Drummond as my backline coach, he's been pretty good. A guy who I really like to work with, and just had some things to work on during the preseason, and it came out in games, but I still got a long way to go. You get different matchups, and you learn from game to game what you can do and what you can't do. So. Still got a long way to go.
But I imagine having the consistency of position enables you to relax a little bit and just learn, as opposed to worrying about your spot or worrying about what you should be doing or whether or not you're playing well enough, that you're just in a position, you've got to know your role. And that would create some comfort, I suppose, as opposed to perhaps what's happened in the last 5 years?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess I had to earn my game first as a defender. So.
Yep.
String a couple of games together, and you know, my form warrant that I get a spot in the side. So, and it's probably doing you know, what's got me to this stage and having that opportunity to play as defender and being part of our best 22. So, I still got to keep working, watch some vision, watch other players. You know, chat to the coaches. Scott Thompson, he's been someone that I admired for a long time, and he's having an outstanding season. So, we sit down, look through vision, and talk about other players and how he's played them in the past, and just learn from him.
So, how much time did you spend chasing around Ben Brown or Jared Waite through the preseason, and how important was that to giving you the confidence to know that you could play in that position?
Yeah, I mean, Brownie, you know, is one of the best forwards going around, and so is Wadey. But Brownie in particular, you know, just got you just appreciate him as a player more because I've played on him, and he's just so mobile for a big bloke. You know, everyone thinks he's slow. Brownie's not slow. He moves around, and you know, the space that he creates for himself, it makes me appreciate the forwards, how hard it is to play that position, because potentially you've just got someone tagging you the whole time and you've just got to create the space and still run and jump at the ball. But those guys were really good. Took me up the ground, trying to lose me and come back and mark the footy. So, no, it's good to have different players you can play on, you know, smaller players and taller players. But obviously being versatile, you know, I can play on different matchups.
Is it easier being a defender than being a forward in your eyes?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's easy, but is
careful,
it easier?
Be careful.
No, I think they both have their challenges. Obviously, you've got to create space for yourself as a forward, and that's something I struggled with. I couldn't really use my strength, although I'm strong. But now down back, I'm finding it easier that I can use my strength and... I guess my focus is just the ball and the man. But the toughest part about it is when you play high and, you know, having to watch the ball and, you know, when they duck up and try and hit up on you. I think that's one of the hardest parts of being a defender.
Brad Scott has had a really good year with what he's been able to do on the field with North Melbourne from the coach's box. But what's the role been with you and him? Because he's been someone that's had a lot of belief in you for a long time now. Is it a really strong, strong relationship you've got, sort of not just in football, but just in life?
Yeah, I mean, he's been a pretty big supporter of me since day one. I think we've been there the same amount of time. He's been harder on me at times, which is great. You need that from your coach because... you know, I guess, you know, different personalities, you know what you can get and can't get out of your player. Where him, the belief that he's had in me that other people haven't, just backing me in, and he's always believed that if I had a strong pre-season, continuity and with training and games, that there's no reason why I couldn't be in our best 22. And that's something he's always told me consistently. And I suppose I had to believe that myself. I've got the belief in my body now. And, you know, having the backing of your coach is enormous, just goes a long way. So now all I have to do is do my part and, you know, he'll play me. So
you talk about him having belief in you, Brad Scott having belief in you, you having belief in yourself, but you sort of mentioned that maybe others didn't. Do you play, not trying to prove people wrong, but is that part of your personality that you want to, you know, prove, hey, I can do this? Or is that not part of your personality makeup? You just go and do your thing?
Yeah, a little bit. I'd love to prove some people wrong that, you know, someone who's didn't grow up playing footy can come and match it up with, you know, potentially the best of the best. And AFL is, you know, the number one sport in this country. So I want to prove those people wrong, but I also want to show other people that you can do it. So
yeah.
Do you ever sit there and consider what you've achieved in football, just getting to the AFL in the first place and the significant achievement that was, but also now playing the game and being a trailblazer for other Sudanese kids? Do you ever sit there and think about that?
Probably when you're feeling a bit down, really. I think that's when it comes in as a motivation. Use that as a motivation when things aren't going well. You can sort of you know, feel sorry for yourself at times, but then you look back and see how far you've come. You're like, well, you know, I've come this far now. I'm like, I might as well keep going. So
makes sense to me. Did you ever think that perhaps it was coming to an end? Did you ever think that it was over at any stage through the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, the last couple of years. I mean, they were pretty tough in terms of, you know, being in and out of the side, and obviously injuries, and I mean, they're hard things to juggle. But then, you know, being at the footy club and continually being told that if you get your body right, you know, there's an opportunity to you know, to get it all going together. And I think that's why I've just kept being so resilient and trying to do everything right, because I know when I'm up and going that I can match it with the best.
I literally was just doing a little walk jog just to see how it was going to go, and just didn't respond. So didn't do anything major, but I just knew that it wasn't feeling right. So nothing is bad, just was giving me some pretty solid warning signs. So I've obviously had a few injuries in my time, so just really listening to them and really respecting it.
Bloody hell, Jared Waite. Stop getting injured. You're too good. Dude, getting injured. Get out there for the Kangaroos. He's not playing this week. Who knows how long it's going to be? Up to 3 weeks, I reckon, with that dodgy little calf complaint. That was Jared Waite yesterday talking about his situation. You're in the Prosper Inner Sanctum on the Breakfast Club with Magic Dore, his teammate from the Kangaroos. Just cannot get him out there full-time, Madge.
Yeah. It's been so good this year for us.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He is. We love Waitey. He's a pretty relaxed character. I suppose with that injury, you kind of have to respect it with his age.
He's 62.
He plays like a 21-year-old.
He does, yeah. He's amazing.
No, he's good. I mean, it frees up Brownie when he's up there. And
Wood.
Yeah, Mason Wood. And he can play on the wing for his size, so he's hard to match up on. And I think I was asked early in the week how he was going to go. I thought he was going to play, but just shows how much I know about the medical staff.
Well, in fairness, that's not your job.
No, it's good. But I think, to be honest, I don't know. There's no time frame. I think he's just going to give him as much time as he needs. And when he's ready, he prepares well. So we just come back in.
So, Madge, we go into the Harmony game this week. Firstly, what does that mean to you? But then secondly, how long did it take for you to realise the influence that you can have over the Sudanese youth, and potentially with the issues that some of those guys are going through, some of those younger kids are going through? I know you've voiced a few campaigns for that and have been very passionate about that. How important is this weekend's game for you?
Yeah, I mean, like, I speak of importance of footy and stuff, and, you know, the opportunity that I've been given, to be able to influence young kids. I think that's important as footballers, because so many young kids, they look up to us, see what we're doing, and social media is big. It's pretty big these days, and I suppose for me, it's a big passion of mine. I spoke about coming from another country and coming here, going through some of the challenges myself. I feel like I can relate to some of these kids, and having a voice, because I think South Sudanese people, or African people in general in Victoria, we don't really have a lot of people of influence. I feel like it's the right thing to do for me, and I suppose with the Harmony game this weekend between us and the Western Bulldogs, it's just one of those games where celebrating the diversity within our game and what makes our game great. We've got so many nationalities that come to the footy. Potentially, they're where our next fans are going to come from, our members. So the North Melbourne Football Club and the Western Bulldog, They do a great job within their community. We've got the huddle, and they've got a similar thing down there. So it's a centre where young kids can come in, get help with homework. But I suppose we use footy, to attract them as well. So, yeah, it's an important game for me personally, but I think just for the footy club.
What are the challenges for young Sudanese kids, or you said before, African kids that come and live in Australia? What's the greatest challenge? Even in your situation growing up, what was the hardest thing?
Yeah, I mean, social inclusion, really. I guess most of them are refugees and migrants. They've gone through challenges of trying to come here and missed out on the stability of a family home, or playing structured sports without it's not a fault of their own. They're just the circumstances, you know, life has thrown at them. So coming here, trying to fit in, you look different from everyone else. You go to a different school. You try to learn how to speak English. So, and obviously, some of these families come from low socioeconomic backgrounds, so financial issues. But I suppose what I try and tell them is that they're all challenges. But you know, if you're willing to work hard and find a passion of your own, there are opportunities that you can really make it in this country.
You're in your mid-20s now, mm-hmm. almost late-20s now.
Yeah.
Is it easier for the kids who are teenagers now than it was for you when you started? Are you seeing a change in society, that there is a greater acceptance and it's easier to assimilate into society?
Yeah, education's a big thing, educating people about my culture and also this educating the migrants and refugees about the Australian culture. I think that's really important because I suppose their way of life doesn't really fit into the way of life here. And people don't really understand that. And I think that's an important part. And I wouldn't say becoming tolerant is probably not the word. I think we're just more accepting. So, yeah.
Who introduced you to the game? So you talk about, because you came to the country when you were a teenager, weren't you? You were 13?
11.
11.
Yeah, yeah.
Who introduced you to the game of Aussie rules, and how important was that introduction for that inclusion that you talk about?
I was mates at school. I came here, went to an intensive English language school for 3 months, and then I started Year 7, and I was coming home. I was having fights with other kids at school. Just wasn't fitting in. I was the only African kid at the school. My brother was a bit older than me, so I was having a really tough time. And when I come around Year 8, I met some new friends, and they were playing footy at lunchtime a fair bit. So they said, come over, kick with us. And we played inter-school sports. And from then on, they told me to come to their local footy club. And it just kept on rolling over. And I just found that I really enjoyed footy. And that's where it all started.
Are you seeing more, because I think traditionally African kids play soccer. Mm-hmm. You're seeing more with guys like you being that beacon, I suppose, sporting beacon, that they're more kids interested in the national game, into Aussie rules?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a few footy clubs over in the West. My local footy club, there's a huge influx of South Sudanese kids that play at that footy club, boys and girls. But also at soccer, some of the boys are doing really well. We had a few guys that are at Melbourne Victory that played in their grand final win. So I think the more role models that we can have, the more that those sort of issues are going to decrease.
Do you think more will play AFL level? We had a text asking you the question that. Who's the next one? Is there one coming through, or is there going to be more that are going to be good enough to play? I mean, Alia is another one that, he's so good to watch. When he plays.
Got a good haircut.
Yeah.
How good's his haircut?
Mr. T.
Mr. T.
But are there more coming through?
Yeah, there are more coming through, especially, the work that AFL Victoria does with some of the... with some of their squads that they have specific for multicultural kids. Their multicultural squads are really strong. But also, there's a kid at the Western Bulldogs by the name of Buku. So he's a really good kid as a person, but he's also, pretty handy footballer. So I think, I'm not too sure if this year's his draft year or the year after.
No, this year.
Yep. So he's one kid that's coming through. CJ at Hawthorne, so he got drafted last year, and that's someone who came through the multicultural squad program, and he was part of the NGA Next Generation Academy. So there are a few kids that are coming through, but it takes a bit of time, but got to be patient.
And if we can get supporters before we let you go, because we are running out of time, unfortunately, we'll have to chat to you all day, Madge, to be honest. The Bulldogs game on Saturday night, the Harmony game at Etihad Stadium. What are we thinking? Because we're sitting in the 8 at the moment. The year's been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Can you maintain it, do you reckon?
Yeah, you can if you come if you come with the right attitude and mentality to come and play. Obviously, we've just come off the bye. So, and we had a pretty solid session yesterday. I think that's really important to come back, feeling fresh, but just to keep reinforcing what makes us a good side. And I think you can't underestimate the Western Bulldogs. Obviously, they've had injuries, and but you know, at this level, and if you're not on any given day, you can be exposed pretty quickly. So we've just got to come and start well.
Scotty Gullen has been podcasting himself silly in the last couple of days and promoting it shamelessly on social media. He joins us for all the latest news in footy. Good morning, Scotland.
Hello, Daniel. I thought the beauty of podcast is they didn't have footage.
Well,
of you.
You would have seen the camera rolling as you were providing the... unbelievable inside information.
It was. We didn't have any guests. We didn't have it was a bit of a buy disaster. So I talked for 45 minutes with your mate, C. Ling, and I was exhausted. But now, I pulled the car over on the highway about 40 minutes ago.
Why is that?
When the Bart Cummings trainer of the great superstar, I thought, oh, the boys, we're going to get an update. We've been asking for Simon Wilde to come on for months.
Yes.
Fresh air.
We just assumed you'd taken it to another trainer again. That's what you seem to do. We assumed that Simon no longer trained the
float. It would have been embarrassing if we asked the question and
it'd been moved.
I did walk into that.
The float had arrived.
I did walk into that. That's a fair point. I'll accept that.
Yes, you did walk into that. What's happening in the world of footy news, Scotty?
Well, Adam's back.
Great to have him back.
It is good
and
to be
as
back.
We know, he's the manager of mega superstars in the competition.
I love some of the kits that you can object to.
One of whom went home and stopped playing when he was away. Clearly, Mexico, and he was missing Adam.
Well, that happens.
Who are you talking about?
Cyril.
Oh, yes.
Now, I know it's a family matter, Cyril. But have we got any sort of update?
No, Adam? Look, and it's a family matter, and I think we need to continue to respect that.
Everyone has.
I think everyone has respected that. It's been fantastic. In that way, because it's a family matter, I'm not prepared to say much more than that. I respect that, and I respect what he's going through, and I'll leave it at that.
I'll follow it up.
I'm not saying anything.
No, but I think the one question I'd like to ask on behalf of Hawthorn fans, because we talked to Isaac about this yesterday, the feeling was a couple of weeks ago he may never play again, or that he definitely won't play again this year. And you know, we obviously respect Cyril's situation, but can you give any indication as to whether he would?
I think he'll be back, and I think he wants to be back. I just can't give it a time frame at the moment. Simple as that. I'm in contact with him. I'm speaking with him. And when he's ready, he'll come back. Hopefully it's soon.
Hopefully it is soon, because it would be great to have him back. He's a wonderful part of the AFL competition. But if he's got things going on, we need to get that sorted out.
Hey, just before we get on to other things, because we were talking to Isaac yesterday, I thought he made some amazing comments about the rule changes that they trialled a couple of weeks ago. I'm actually surprised it didn't get more traction in the media yesterday, because he was glowing.
More freed him up and never felt more free.
Really, really interesting.
What do you think's going to happen? I mean, they want to do something in October. It's obvious. But from what you're hearing with the testing, like they've had two big sessions. You got some players who are like, oh, I don't know about this. It was a bit silly. And then you've got others like Isaac going, oh, how good's this? What do you think? None of us know, but...
No, I think it's going to be significant.
You reckon it's zones?
Yep. I'm not sure whether it's going to be zones, but I think the change is going to be significant, and it is definitely happening. And I think I was talking to a couple of people yesterday, and I think that the feeling is half at AFL House.
RSN understands.
It's got to a point where it's not going to be able to solve itself. Now, whether people listening to this believe it or not, they don't think it's going to be able to solve itself, and there's going to be intervention, and it's going to be quite significant.
Well, it's interesting, that philosophy and that messaging from headquarters, when you hear Sam Mitchell yesterday talking about...
Yes, I like that.
There's nothing wrong with it. It'll find itself out of you.
It's old people and media.
It's old people and media that are causing the issues and driving this agenda, so to speak. They're not his words, but so to speak, to change the game, because it doesn't look like it did when it was their favourite period 20 years ago when they were growing up.
All right. So
which would have been different to the generation before when they were growing up. Would have been a very different game.
So that's Sam. Let's hear from Isaac, who was Sam's former teammate, talking about what he experienced with these trials.
Yeah, we just had a bit of a train around and they threw a couple of different things at us while we were down at Etihad having a train. And I think, the AFL are probably trialling 7 or 8 things at the moment, and I'm not sure if they're going to bring any of it in or if they're going to bring all of them in, but I think they're just having a look at the game, and I'm guessing their purpose is they want the best product out there. Well, I won't tell you anything that we did, but I will tell you, after Dane said it was enjoyable, it's the first time in my AFL career that I've actually had a lot of time and space to run with the ball.
There was Isaac Smith yesterday on the Prosper Inner Sanctum on the Breakfast Club, and that was intriguing, as you said, Whitey. I mean, he was glowing in the trial, but I think Mitch's point is whether artificial intervention is the answer as opposed to natural evolution, I think is what he was talking about yesterday.
Yeah, and
he's alluding to players inside forward 50.
Yeah, those zones.
That's what he's, no doubt he's alluding to that.
Yeah, but so to what Sam says versus the counter-argument now, which is, I think, a fairly unified front at AFL level, is that evolution isn't going to fix it. That it's just been coached and squeezed out. The lemon's been squeezed to the point where there has to be intervention to have a happy medium, I guess.
There's always more juice in the lemon. There's always another squeeze. You can always get another drop. Can't you?
Oh, I agree.
Well, you just go to the bottle. You know.
Well, that's much easier.
It's artificial.
So do we have to have a JLT troll? Or we're going to go in without a troll.
Well, they can't do that, Scotty, because there's only 2 games each. You know, there's only 3
games of
footy.
No, but at least it's a trial.
But then what will happen is that they may trial some of them in that period, but then we can't then wait another 12 months before the implementation comes.
But I wouldn't want to live off 20 minutes at Etihad and 10 minutes at the Gabba and say, oh, yeah, that's beautiful. Hmm. That works. That's great.
I reckon there'll be more. There'll be clearly more trials, because what happens is they'll get to October and then this new committee will present
a
list of changes that they want to put forward, and the commission have got to tick off on it.
The interesting part is, and I'd love to hear from the AFL, is what they want to achieve out of it. What they want to achieve by the rule change. Do they want to achieve less congestion? Do they want to achieve higher score? What is it? What are the goals? I think they want an aesthetically better game. But what does that look like? A more entertaining
game.
Can they show us a game from recent past, recent history, that we want the game to look like this?
Queen's birthday.
Everyone's saying, oh, we want less congestion, we want more goals, we want this, we want... Show me the game that you go, you know what, that is a perfect example of how we want AFL football to look now and moving into the future.
Let's go back to 1993.
Yeah, but see, that's silly. I know, I agree with you, Adam.
We'll go around in circles.
Do you enjoy going to the football as much now as you did...
I always enjoy going to the football.
That's not what I asked. Do you enjoy it as much as you did 10 years ago?
10 years ago, that was when West Coast and Sydney were going at it in those low-scoring affairs. I love those games because it was a game of chess. It was the absolute game of chess, and every possession, every contest meant something. Now, at times, it probably doesn't. But I don't think the game's as bad as what a lot of people make out it is. It's still very well attended. The membership is as high as ever.
Yep.
As high as ever.
Yeah,
so
TV down.
You can get 1 and 2 game memberships.
You can get whatever you want. You can skin a membership however you want. But if people are dropping off memberships and the like, well, that's when you start. Yep, eyes are going off the TV. I get that. But Steve Hocking, whoever that is, show us the game that you think this is the way we want AFL football played in the future.
Historically, the commission's been conservative. Like, a lot of stuff gets pushed to them, and they, you know, like night grand final, things like that, and they just go, So that'll be the interesting balance.
Yep.
Like Gil and his team have tried to force a few things through, and they just get knocked on the head.
Yeah. I reckon the two that will definitely happen are starting positions in some form and a massive reduction in the interchange.
Well, I'm certainly okay with the interchange. I'm not sold on the starting
points. No, I'm not sold on starting points.
Starting points is ridiculous.
Because that's fundamental of player movement. Because interchange, you won't even know. As a fan, as a viewer, you won't even know. And the other one was, which I quite like, which we've discussed in the last couple of weeks, is just extend the goal square a bit.
Yeah, I like that.
Any difference to general play, but gives the game a chance to flow when the ball is kicked through from behind, which is, for, you know, it's all about their forward half pressure. It, all the teams squeeze up in the forward half when they get a kick in.
Kick it over.
Get it through. Get it through a bit easier, which might create a bit of length in the ground. But anyway, we'll see what happens. But to point before, Whitey, it was interesting that we had a couple of teams already trial these situations, Brisbane and Hawthorn. They're probably duty-bound to do this with all clubs, aren't they, the AFL?
I would have thought.
If there's no warm-up period,
it's an advantage for both those teams.
Yeah. They're probably duty-bound to give everyone a look and say, this is what we're thinking. What do you reckon?
Yeah, and I think one of the other tricky things, too, with this is that if there are going to be significant changes to the way the game is played, and we're talking about interchange reduction and so forth, clubs may be looking for different players in a draft situation or a trade situation. So I think it's imperative, and it's clearly a fair thing to do, is that whatever the changes are, they need to be announced as quickly as possible.
Yep.
Because it will affect training and drafting.
Yeah, I think they've acknowledged that. It's October or it's nothing. There's no dragging on.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody better than Thompson in his heyday, playing, striding along, swinging his club with a jaunty walk and a smile on his face. It was an absolute delight to watch him.
If you're a golf fan, you'll know that voice absolutely. If you're not, it is the voice of Peter Ellis, who is one of the most respected commentators in the world of golf, follows the European Tour around. Whitey, you would have heard him plenty of times on the coverage, watching your favourite tournaments on the European Tour, talking about Peter Thompson. Well, someone who knows him better than all of us put together is Jack Newton, one of Australian golf's favourite sons. And I believe he's down in Melbourne this week, staying at his daughter's house, and may have drunk the Peronis last night from the fridge. He joins us on the line this morning. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay, very well, thank you. Any truth to the rumour there's no Peroni left in the fridge?
Well, I only had two. I don't know how many Ben had.
All right, knowing Ben, Ben Dixon we're speaking of, chances are he's had a few as well. Great to have you on the program, Jack. Not great circumstances, of course, but your relationship with Peter Thompson, what legacy does he leave for the world of golf?
Well, he was a very clever man, both in the way he spoke and the way he played. I played with him probably getting towards the end of his career. He had a few tricks up his sleeve that you had to be aware of. But apart from that, he won 5 British Opens, but the first 4 was predominantly just England, Isles, Scotland, Wales, a few from France and a few from Spain. But there was no Americans played in the British Opens at that stage, and it wasn't until Kilmaigle won in 1960 that Arnold Palmer and a few of his cohorts arrived to play in the British Open, and then Peter won in 65. So, but he certainly was a great competitor, and played most of his golf in Japan, as it turned out, and he was very dominant in Japan because he hit it so straight, and particularly in the wind, he was able to keep underneath the wind, and he had beautiful rhythm in his golf swing, which is always a great asset to have.
What I didn't know, Jack, until reading some of the stories in the last 24 hours, was that he pretty much taught himself. There was not a lot of coaching or teaching for him. He's taught himself the game and taught himself the swing. And it's unusual to have such a, it's been described as an hypnotic swing. It was so effortless and so easy. Doing that by yourself, it's an unusual outcome, I suppose, after all those years of golf.
Yeah, he did work quite a bit with Norman Von Nieder. And I know they toured the country areas of our country with Bobby Locke as well. And I think at that stage of his career, and this is what the Von told me, that they just couldn't beat Bobby Locke. He had a short game that was awesome. And in the end, Peter Thompson apparently started missing a few greens on purpose so that he could work on his short game. But yeah, Bobby was a great player. There's no doubt about that. But Peter was One of those guys that didn't say too much on the golf course and occasionally would throw in a little jibe here and there that it, you'd think, well, what the hell is he on about, you know? But I had a lot of respect for him, particularly I got on the tour board in the late 70s, and Peter was one of the bosses of the PGA itself. And we had a few problems and a few issues at that stage, and I spoke to Peter about it, and he said, righto, well, we'll set up a meeting. He turned up with full of advice, and in the end, there was probably about 15 or 20 people in the room. And Peter said, right, anyone who hasn't played on the golf tour, out. And that's duly what happened, and we resolved the issue that we had in front of us within 20 minutes. And that was the way he operated. He was very good.
It's a big weekend for the Magpies netball team. They've got the crosstown rivals, the Vixens, and need a win. It must be said, and it's a Magpie takeover. What's it called, Whitey? The
Precinct
takeover from the Collingwood Football Club. The VFL are playing the Collingwood-Carlton game on Sunday, of course, and the Magpies and Vixens game. And Erin Bell is keen for a win. She joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Erin.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Thanks for being on the line. We appreciate your time. Massive game. Two wins from seven so far for the Magpies. Bonus points have been helpful, must be said. But how important is this game? Is it line in the sand stuff this week?
Yeah, it doesn't sound great when you say 2-7, but it doesn't feel that way, which is so hard, I think, because, as you said, we have won a lot of bonus points, which have kind of been our saviour this year. But, yeah, like, we're coming up to, I guess, the second round of playing everybody again now, and we were so close to the Vixens in round one that we only went down by one. So we're pretty confident that we can beat them. But, yeah, the problem has been for us our consistency over the four quarters. And as cliche as it sounds, unfortunately, that's been our issue. So, yeah, we'll definitely be trying to get that consistency, and then that will get us the win.
Just even last week, Erin, you were so close. It looked like you were going to beat the Giants. You got in a winning position early. Then even there were times in that second half where you were getting yourself back into the game, but there was just a few errors at the wrong time.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, that's exactly right. The timing is probably what we've addressed as well. Like, we can go quite well and we can get a run of a few goals, and then it'll be that next goal that we really need to put our foot down and go ahead with the game that will turn it over and then let them back in. So at this league, in this league at this level, you just can't afford to do that, because a team will take a sniff and then off they go. There'll be eight goals up within like a few minutes. So it can all happen very quickly. So we just have to make sure we're really careful with the ball and we treasure the turnover that we are getting.
Now, you're new to this rivalry between the Vixens and the Magpies, being the captain over in Adelaide for many years until this year. Do you feel the rivalry? Is it real?
Well, we had our own rivalry, I think, with everybody in Adelaide as well. We thought that we had a rivalry with the Vixens as well, I think. But, no, yeah, it is real, and it's bizarre, like, I guess, you know, being training at Collingwood and then having Hisense across the road, like, you're all so close. But, yeah, there is definitely that rivalry, and I think within the community as well, Collingwood being a new team and trying to break into that netball market and trying to get some Magpies fans, that it is tough because Vixens have been around forever, so everybody's on that bandwagon, and I guess that just amplifies the rivalry. So it's definitely there, but I think the favour is kind of in the Vixens at the moment, as because we are that new club, so we need to get a win to prove that we can, have our share of that rivalry too.
So what are you going to do better? Because they can't get you again. This is a really important game, as Half said. What's going to be different this time to last time?
Well, we start well, so we have to make sure we do that again, and then it's our little lull in the middle of the game. So we can start well and we can finish well, but we need to make sure that in that second and third quarter we, take it to a next level. So, look, we're looking for those answers as much as you are, but we're hoping that, we've got a good formula. We actually have Lisa Alexander, the Diamonds coach. She's in at training this week with us. She travels around to all the teams. So this isn't, you know, a little special thing for us. She actually does go to all the teams throughout the year. And it just so happens that this week is our week. So hopefully, you know, she might be able to spark a little bit of something into us. But, yeah, look, it being at Margaret Court Arena as well, that's technically our home court, I guess, with Hisense being our home as well, but kind of more the Vixen's home. So, you know, we have to try and take that little tiny advantage that we might have with it being technically our home game.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.